Hello and welcome to the Golden Generation. How good is everyone feeling? Lionel Messi, if you're tuning in, I know for a fact that you are shaking in your boots, my friend, at the prospect of facing Matthew Lecky, Graham Arnold and the boys this coming Saturday night. We are so fired up, and apologies to everyone. Well, I think all of our voices might be a bit croaky at the moment, but the sole perpetrator of my little decline in my vocal aptitude is this, at Fatty Sports Bar in Ho Chi Minh City. There you have it, Fatty Sports Bar in Ho Chi Minh City, but someone that was somewhere a little bit better, just a tad higher up in terms of atmosphere, no doubt, is Tom Williams. And Tom, before I let you speak, let me play this, because this video I love more than anything in the world right now.
Play the whistle, ref! Whistle! Whistle, ref!
Oh, we'll go have another.
That's a good one. You've gone to cry.
It's gone one step up from what he did last time at the Chitty's game. But Tom, how do you feel watching that, and how are you feeling overall?
Oh, it's just absolute goosebumps, to be honest. I feel very happy after the win. It is probably the best moment in my entire life. I know I said that after the Tunisia game, but this is actually usurped that somehow. I am in complete disbelief at everything that has transpired within the last 12 hours. And I would just like to say that the actual journey to getting into the front row to witness that was a long, arduous one. We had to evade about 812,000 members of the You're In My Seat Brigade to get into the front row. We managed to do it, and we got to witness that as close as possible to the players. And then to get that all moment, to capture it for Copper 90 in front of 1.1 million Instagram followers, it was absolutely mental. Not the painting me in the greatest light there, but it was the pure emotion. And that was actually the first time I've seen that video back, because of the actual, like, franticness that has transpired this afternoon. For everyone that doesn't know, I literally went from this Socceroos game, like, celebrated for like an hour after the game, and then went straight to Lusail Stadium for the Saudi Arabia v Mexico game, which was also like absolutely insane, and then just went straight to the Hive. And now I'm back at my apartment, had a 2-minute shower, and I'm appearing on the Golden Generation, because that's the commitment to the cause. But absolutely the best moment of my life. I'm in complete disbelief, and I have tickets to Argentina in the round of 16. Oh. It is going to be absolutely mental.
Oh, mate, you've given me goosebumps, and no doubt you've given our special guest goosebumps. And Tony Wilson, just before I let you speak, I'm going to top off the triumvirate of the three best places to be on the planet with this video that you put on Twitter.
Oh!
As you can see, Harper, I was at San Siro in Milan.
Looks like you're burning down someone's house, but of course, that is Federation Square, the place where millions of Aussies would have wished to be. That, Tony, just looked absolutely incredible.
Well, it was a gamble, because this was a real, you know, it was a tough call time, 2 a.m. for a lot of Melburnians, but that square was packed. You couldn't move in it. And so the Socceroos fans answered in their thousands. They say there were around 8,000 people there. And look, to be honest, you know, I'm one of those ones who goes, well, what Tom showed us is that you don't actually need flares to make an incredible atmosphere. The flares do look spectacular and they give an effect, but kind of I worry that it ends in disaster, you know. So it only takes one person to really get burnt, and then they stop having the Federation Square event, the live event. So I was watching the square, the flares with a real mixed heart, thinking, I just hope this is okay. One idiot threw a flare at the screen. You know, like it was just that sort of element where you're just going, what are you doing? What are you doing? But look, I echo everything Tom said. It's up there. It's right up there. It's the same rush as Kale's 1 and 2 punch in Kaiserslautern. It's up there with, you know, hitting the front against the Netherlands in the 60th minute. It's one of those ones where you just, it's so hard to make the round of 16. This is not the team that people thought would make the round of 16. We're sitting here where a lot of us are in humble pie because that coach has made these people believe. And you know, they absorbed punishment last night. I was just in awe of their ability to just get up off the canvas. Those attacks kept coming down each wing, and it was hell watching it. But then, for some reason, it was like they punched them out, the old rope-a-dope in the Ali Rumble in the Jungle. We absorbed. We didn't look like getting the ball ourselves. And then suddenly at about 35 minutes, the heat just turned down. It was like, oh, we can take a breath. Because it seemed as though our players had worked into the game, or their players were tired and were frustrated by the fact that they hadn't got one. And then once we got one in the second half, I reckon their players turned it up. Like, they didn't actually have energy and they didn't have invention. And they kind of went, well, we're not going to get two. We're done now. You know, and so it felt like we actually were easily the better side in the second half, I thought. You know, we were great. We controlled things. So, you know, ultimate respect, Graham Arnold. You've made either the A-League is a much better competition than people give it credit for, and it's producing really good footballers that can compete with the second tier. I'm not going to say we're going to knock over England and Argentina, but we can compete with the best of the rest in World Cup football. That's an unbelievable performance for a nation of our size.
Oh, so good. So good that the goosebumps that Tom gave me did not go away when you were speaking there. And also, that the panel isn't quite complete yet. We've got, on pod debut, actually, a special Scandinavian guest who's going to join us shortly. I might bring him in a bit later, just after we finish off taking the piss out of him and his country behind his back. But, Tom, you said best day of your life, and I don't think anyone doubts that. It was probably the best day of many, many, many people's lives. So just tell us your story from the day and the night in all of its glory.
Oh, well, look, honestly, so much of the day was occupied just, and this is being like full transparent and honest here, so much of this was just occupied by like being so worried by how much stuff I had to capture for Copper 90, because that was basically like one of the biggest things I've ever had to like do in my career. Like, literally going out to like 1.1 million people on Instagram and then being like, no, I don't want to like stuff this up. So yeah. I was literally in Mesherib like all day trying to find Australian fans and trying to like capture decent content and trying to make sure that I like sounded good and the mic sounded good and stuff. So I had like very little time to actually think about the game until I was in the ground. And then when I was in the ground, it was very little actually thinking about the game and more like, you're red, you're white, you're going home tonight towards Denmark. So it was insane, really. But what I will say is that was just like the most insane thing ever. Like, Tony touched on it there, and I like haven't really had a lot of time to tactically analyze this game as I normally would, but we were absolutely shocking in the first half. And then even though it looked like Denmark were going to trample us, Graham Arnold made that change at halftime where he brought Backus on for Goodwin, changed system, and Backus was absolutely phenomenal. And then his tactical flexibility and being able to play multiple roles in the second half, both in a 5-4-1 and in a 4-3-3 and a 4-2-3-1, was incredibly valuable to the team, to the point where I feel like that substitution at halftime played a really valuable role in us going on to win the game. So massive credit to Graham Arnold. He's super Graham Arnold, and he knows exactly what we need. Suter at the back and Lekie in attack. And trust me, Argentina will not know what has hit them when we come at them in the round of 16. I'll tell you what, Lionel Messi has played with and against some of the best defenders in the world, but he has not played against Harry Suter, and that is what matters here. He is going to struggle against Big Harry. You heard it here.
I think one thing is for certain. Harry Suter is currently in the team of the tournament.
100%.
He should be picked in it. And the other thing I'll say is he has got a very big payday coming, because he is not going to be playing in the Scottish Premiership in 6 months' time. He's an incredible footballer. He's either in the richest vein of form of his life and he'll never play like this again, or here's a guy coming out of a year off knee reconstruction who can perform these levels of acrobatics to be this tall and dominant in the balls coming into the box. He's just been sensational. And like, Messi might turn him around and destroy us. But look, hey, the good news is we're getting Messi at 37, not at 27, you know? And so you just never know.
I personally can't wait for the moment that the Green and Gold Army chants in unison, "Hooaya, hooaya, hooaya," at Lionel Messi as he goes to take his first corner of the game. It will be an absolutely incredible moment.
There is nothing that I look forward to more than Harry Suter absolutely crunching Lionel Messi in the first 30 seconds of the game on Sunday night. That beautiful man.
But Harper, no yellow cards, because we'll need him in the round of eight, you know? So he's got to stay clear.
Legal crunching only.
Hey, just to keep me with my eyes peeled, who's sitting on one? Who's got a yellow card?
Irvine, I think, and Bajic, definitely after today. He got a yellow card early on. Not sure who else. Like I said before, I was at the Saudi-Mexico game, and that was actually really interesting because Mexico, up until like the 95th minute, were going to be in third place only because of yellow cards. They had seven yellow cards compared to Poland's five, and then Saudi Arabia scored in the 95th minute to basically consign Mexico to going out. So we know from that yellow cards mean a lot, but obviously we don't want any of our players being suspended for this match, which I think – personally, to be honest, is probably the top three biggest matches in Australian footballing history. It's going to be like absolutely insane. I can't really remember 2006, but if this surely has to go somewhere close to matching.
Absolutely. This is the same as 2006. Do you know that there's governments around Australia are legislating, or not legislating, but they are enacting live sites. So Adelaide's the first to jump this morning. They've got one that's spreading up in their centenary gardens there or whatever. They've got the live site happening. And so Sydney needs to follow suit. So basically Melbourne has been strong because it's got Fed Square and the government has backed it, despite probably a bit of pressure coming on from media and others. Please stop lighting the flares, people. Let's keep this live site. We need it. But the But basically, it's happening all around the country. This is going to be the biggest game, as you say, Tom. It's the biggest game in Australian football history.
6 a.m. on Sunday morning, I think it is, and just the most exciting thing. But Tony, I want to get into the real nitty gritty of how you experienced the game in a moment. But I also want to know how all our listeners and viewers experience the game themselves. But we've been leaving our third panellist hanging in the waiting room. He is, he's a Danish man. He's backpacking around Australia. He's a good friend of mine. He goes by the name, he's on pod debut, of Mulls Tiger Christensen. Mulls, how are you feeling?
Oh, good pronunciation.
Thank you. How are you feeling? No, it's not as good as us, no doubt.
Not at all. Very good. Tired, sitting up, watching such an awful game. Slept poorly afterwards because of it. Everything is bad. We're sad, we're crying.
Well, what were your expectations coming into it?
The World Cup in general or the game against Australia?
This game specifically.
Well, we were expecting us to completely sit on the game throughout at least most of the 90 minutes. So the first 30 minutes were great for us, as Tony said, but then we started giving up already, it seemed. We couldn't really break through, and then we just took the tempo out of the game. Didn't ever come back from it, really.
So, I don't know how much of a tactics man you are, Marcus, but in terms of the lineup and the way you set up and your shape and everything like that, was it too... your liking or not so much?
I kind of liked it. I liked that we went four in the back because we usually go five, or at least three central defenders and two winger fullbacks. So I liked that we stuck to a four man in the back to go more offensive. And I also liked that we had creative wingers in Lindstrom and Andreas Skov. But I would have preferred probably Dahlberg or Braithwaite on the top. But otherwise, it was a solid lineup. We just lacked motivation and creativity on most of the fields, it seemed.
Oh, sorry to say this, mate, but all those words are just music to my ears.
Well, Magnus, if I can jump in, Magnus, you've been like it all tournament, though. It's been very un-Denmark, hasn't it? Like, I watched the game against Tunisia. And yes, the second half was okay, but the first half was really disgraceful against Tunisia.
It was so lackluster. We seemed to lack motivation almost, and the players seemed so insecure and unsafe on that field. I don't know if it's lack of... there has been a lot of talk through Danish media that many of the players were unfit. They are not regular starters in their clubs, most of them. So they could have been pretty rusty and nervous. And at the same time, people also blame all this media attention on the World Cup, and a lot of people have put pressure on Denmark about boycotting and doing all these things with the armband and so on. I think the players focused on other things than the games themselves.
Maybe.
In the end. So they just were really not motivated and not creative at all, it seemed. We didn't have any chances, I feel like, in the games, in any of the games, actually. We had one good chance against Tunisia, then we had one set piece goals against France, and then we have basically had nothing real threatening against you either. We really lacked that attack.
That's what Henry Sirtar does.
Bonus. Had you heard of Harry Sutar before this tournament?
I basically don't know. I don't know any Australian player except for Matthew Ryan.
And how shit did you think
and
you were as a team?
Yeah, Moy.
How you were?
How shit did you think the Socceroos were as a team?
I mean, before the game, I told my friends, we can't lose it against a team that calls themselves the Socceroos. That's just basically embarrassing. So soccer kangaroos, so I don't know. But it's grateful. Bad nickname.
Magnus, I walked out of the stadium in 2018 in Sochi when Denmark had... You'd had a reasonably comfortable one-all draw with us, which was enough for you, but you hadn't dominated. And the Danes were scathing. It was like, we've drawn one-all with you. And I was doing these vox pops, and I was really upset because we'd gone out. And you were just all saying, oh, we drew with you. You know, it was that feel. And I was just like, you know, we're actually quite good. We're quite good. And your disrespect is at your peril. Well, that today was disrespect at your peril. Yeah.
Well, maybe Australians just don't get the attention because their league is not that well known, and you're so far away. You don't compete in European leagues at all. You don't really get that attention that European nations and leagues do, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not having a go. I think there is a confidence that Europeans have against any side that's in Asia or Africa, you know, especially Senegal. Maybe Senegal have got respect now, and but, you know, all of the Asian teams come in with a sense that they're gettable, I think, from the European clubs and the big South American clubs. And it's interesting that Japan, you know, that's just such a cough-up from Japan. They should already be through. You know, they're much better than us.
They're through it.
Yeah,
against Costa Rica
that's
there.
That's so bad that they coughed up that goal against Costa Rica. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes. I still do have a chance, though, if they get the results against Spain.
I'm just hoping for that a bigger nation goes out as well, so we are not the headline in the news. So please, either Belgium, Spain, or Germany, please throw it, please.
And Marlis, I know you like our country a lot. Maybe not so much now, but are you going to be supporting us in the knockout stages?
You better win. You better win the whole thing now. You better win. Otherwise, I'll be sad because I will be celebrating the tournament with you now. When I actually manage to find some people who care about the games, people up north don't really seem to care at all.
Yeah, well, Magnus, what do you think? So, do you think, like, you saw that domination in the first 30 minutes, and we were probably performed as you thought we were going to perform? Is there a sense does the miracle continue? I mean, Denmark have had miracles before where they've taken whole tournaments as underdogs.
Yeah.
That was probably, you're probably pretty young and don't remember that one. Was that 2002?
Yeah,
1992.
We won the European Championship. Yeah, I wasn't even born then.
Yeah, so what do you think of us? Are we going to get our comeuppance against Argentina?
I mean, anything can happen. You can always strike the games out, go for a park the bus, get a lucky lucky chance or something. There is always a possibility. Go to penalties, win those. you always have those weird stories. Like, for example, Portugal. I remember still in Portugal back in 2016. They won the European Championship without winning a single game within 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So anything can happen.
Yeah.
And Denmark won in 1992 without even being qualified. They only came along because the Soviet Union went to war. we didn't even qualify for the cup, and then we won. Anything can happen.
That's incredible. But just before we let you go, mate, we'll leave you on your merry way. Maybe we'll continue to take the piss out of your country once you're gone. But have you got a prediction for who's going to win the tournament on December 18, I think the final is?
So far, I do think that either Brazil or England have a good go. One of those teams, I think. I think England has a really well-rounded squad. Have solid players on every position, both their starting 11 and their substitutes. Whereas every other team has something missing in some sort of position, either defensively or offensively in the midfield. But Brazil has played really well as well. Also France, they could also go and have it. One of those three teams, I think.
Does promise to be a really exciting knockout stage, especially for us Aussies, I guess, as it always is for people around the world.
Yeah.
Marlis, thank you very, very much for joining us in your misery, your current status. We really appreciate you coming on and giving us a little insight into the day. Cheers.
Well, thank you for having me and taking the piss off me.
Cheers, mate. We'll catch you soon.
Cheers. And, catch you in Denmark.
Green and gold for you. Cheers, mate. But Tony, I promised before that you could go real nitty gritty, real granular on your experience of the game. I want to know. I'm not sure exactly when that video was. Was it after the goal or?
That's after the goal.
Okay.
So that's after the goal, and I, so I didn't quite get the goal going in because I was obviously watching the play rather than the phone screen. But then I fumbled around as I was being hit in the back. I was getting hit in the back, and the rolling maul was coming, and I stood strong for my 15-year-old daughter. I got the camera out. I got it up. I held people up. I was like Mark Viduka at the top of the box in 2006. I was strong. I was focused, and I got the video, and it's a ripper. I've also got another really good video that's up on my Twitter that's of the final whistle. A little less crying from me than Tom. I love that, Tom, that you just broke down spontaneously. I was more laughing, and I got the pans, and it was complete mayhem in terms of people jumping everywhere, beer going everywhere, flares going off everywhere. There's just a hue of red around Fed Square. It feels like a war-torn nation. In terms of the granular aspects of the night, I made the decision to go. I was choosing between the pub and the Fed Square, and I thought, 15-year-old will get more of an experience. Polly, she'll get more of an experience at Fed Square than going to just another pub. And so chose to do the outdoor setting. Had to make the pre-game sleep decision. I got 10:30 till 1. It was a solid little nap. A lifesaver, as it turned out, because I didn't sleep afterwards. Got Polly to set her alarm for 1. We get in the car, drive through the city. It's already buzzing. There's people streaming towards the square. Get a good park, walk up, and I get a text from my mate Cam, who I've gone to all the World Cups with, and he just says to me, it is going off in here, but geez, there are some dickheads around, aren't there? And I think that was referring to the fact that flares were already flying in the 30 just minutes before the game.
Like,
and then at least the pre-game, look, the crowd, look, to be honest, the crowd is young there. Like, it's your age. Like, how old are you, Harper? Are you 20?
I'm 19.
Yeah, okay. So they're your age. They're the people. They're the active supporters at Victory. They're the active supporters at City, and they had an opportunity without all. There's no security checks coming in, so yeah, it's kind of open slather a little bit, and that's kind of why I'm saying, like, let's tone it down. We really want this live site to continue. Anyway, then the game starts. They're booing everything. They're booing Ericsson. Cam says to me, you know, pretty hard to hate Ericsson. They're giving it to him, and then every time like an Australian cap came on, they'd all cheer and then boo and cheer, and then the game got started, and it was pretty quiet, I have to say. Like, it did feel like it was the batten down the hatches, this is ugly, one's going in sooner or later. I could just hear all the panic around saying, oh no, oh no, oh no, and it was just like that, a constant barrage of fear. And but then at half time, I thought we had a better 10 minutes of going into the half, and coming out of the half, we were just great. And then the goal was, that's the video you saw. That changed everything. I felt like Denmark were broken and we were going to win after that. I'm normally very pessimistic. And yes, I hated those last 6 minutes with the header that went 20 centimetres over or whatever. And that was a scary 6 minutes. But at the same time, I felt like we were going to do it. And I thought France were going to score. Bloody France.
Oh.
So I just thought, God. France will score, and then it'll be over. They'll need 2. And so I kept on thinking, come on, update, France score. No. Yeah, we shouldn't have stuffed them over on the submarines. Yeah.
There were lots of Alain Le Bleu ringing out from the pub I was in Ho Chi Minh City. And we actually... obviously, Tunisia went 1-0 up. We were all just shitting ourselves. And then France scored to equalise it. And our game finished, and we just all said to each other, oh, didn't matter. We didn't need to score. We failed to see that France's goal was ruled out, and we only saw it like 3 hours later when we got back home and checked the scores of that game. It was a rollercoaster of an experience. But Tom, would you... Oh, sorry, Tony, you go.
I was just going to go in and say, how good... The Socceroos, just the soccer gods and the football gods. Remember the feeling of France going behind was just a shocking feeling. Like, Tunisia have scored and you go, God, yeah, we're just hanging in at nil all. Now you're asking for a goal from us. But that feeling, like, it wasn't even 2 minutes. Like, it couldn't have been quicker. the release from that horrible jail of needing a goal, you know, because if we had had 30 minutes of needing a goal, that would have been such an unpleasant watch. But yeah, we were just released 2 minutes later. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, like you said, the most incredible feeling post-game, knowing that in the end, we did have to win against a team who, on paper and by everyone's expectations and preconceived knowledge, was a really good team in Denmark. And we had to win that game, and we bloody did it. And Tom, I'll ask you, were you keeping track of Tunisia versus France in the stadium?
There was this geezer next to me who had like a live stream up and running of the game. I'm not sure how he actually got it, because I've been very uncertain as to how to actually stream the games. And I've been here for like 10 days. I've literally had to go to like the fan festival or like go back to our apartment and watch it on the telly, because like I don't know how to like stream it on the phone. But there was this geezer who managed to do it like next to me. And we saw Tunisia's goal and we're like, oh my God, this is like game over now. Like there's no chance we're scoring. Like Denmark were so all over us in the first half. So for them to actually score, and then the actual goal itself was such a good goal. It like all of these goals that happened in slow motion, and like he just felt like he did like 100 fake shots and that he'd eventually have the ball like stolen from him after doing one too many. And then he just hits it on his left peg. It absolutely P-rolls into the bottom corner, but no one's complaining because the limbs in our section was just absolutely mental. It just went absolutely off. And then from there on, I felt like we controlled the game so well. Even though Denmark had a lot of the ball, Graham Arnold changing to a 5-4-1, playing Degenek at right wing back, bringing on Bailey right, really helped to sort of have the game on our terms. Like they didn't actually look threatening. I actually mentioned it to the people around me. I was like, the thing that I'm most worried about is the fact that we're like pretty comfortable. Like it felt that Denmark weren't really creating anything. I thought that we were just going to get hit by a massive sucker punch against the run of play in the most Australian fashion possible, because it was insane how comfortable we were in the second half. Like Harry Suter, Kai Rolls just completely controlled the rest of that game, I thought.
Well, the mood in that pub was just that Denmark could flick the switch at any moment and all our hopes and dreams would be crushed, even up to the 95th minute and 59th second of the game. But Tony, you were going to say something, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been making this list because I've been keeping a blog through the World Cup, and I was making a list of our greatest 15 World Cup goals, and I've been in heavy debate as to where now, because I updated it for 16 today. So where does it slot in? Does it slot in at 2 behind? Everything's behind Kale in Porto Alegre, but is it number 2? I think it might be number 2. You know, so he's so good. His change of direction. I keep watching it now, and sort of over and over. And his change of direction. He really twists his body in order to keep the ball, to get such a soft touch on it so that it doesn't go away from him, and then twists his body so that he can get it on his left foot. And it's so beautiful. It's so skillful. And he has 20 centimetres to aim in, you know, under a foot into the corner. And as you say, no power in it, but if you get it in that exact one spot, it's home and hose. I think it's just a greatest, it's one of the greatest goals I've ever seen for us.
And Tom, as people may have seen on some of your socials, it's 4:42 a.m. where you are right now in Qatar, and well, you haven't got a minute of sleep, nor have I, and you've just been partying all night, which I am so jealous is the wrong word, because like I do wish I was there. I do wish every Australian on the face of the earth was there, but I'm so happy that you could be there and experience just this incredible moment in Australian football history.
Yeah, look, it's honestly like pretty hard for me to be serious right now, but I'm going to try my best and trying to put these all the thoughts into my head into a coherent sort of soliloquy or monologue here. But what I'll try and say is that this is, and I tweeted this before, but it is actually the best moment of my life, because anyone who has actually like ever met me will know that basically the majority of my life is governed by football. I like don't really think about much else, to be honest, apart from my under 13 South Melbourne AFL team, of course, that I coach, just to put it out there. But apart from that, I don't actually think about anything else really other than football. And one of the big things that I always think about is Australian football and the Socceroos and the A-League. And this has been the case since I was a young child, and people in my class didn't talk about football. They were talking about AFL. They were all talking about cricket. And you always felt like the one left out in the class because you were always the one that wanted to speak about football. You were always the one that wanted to speak about the World Cup qualifiers, and no one would listen to you because you're going on and talking about Tim Cahill, and you're going on and talking about Troisi, and you're going on and talking about the Asian Cup and how we beat all these fantastic teams that everyone else in the class had never heard of, because they all just assumed they were bad because they were from Asia. These are all the moments in my life that have come into this one moment, and it's so hard to like actually put into words, but it's like so indescribable, because everything that like I think about has led into this, where so many people actually care about the Socceroos and so many people actually care about Australian football. And to see the scenes in Fed Square, it just makes me like so emotional, knowing that people are getting around this team, and it feels like a massive turning point for the game itself in Australia that we're at this point. And it's the first time in my life that I've actually seen this, because I wasn't there to see it in 2006, really. Like, I was like 3 years old or whatever. So it's just, and to be here in Qatar for it, to actually be there and see it happen, it's just the most amazing thing ever.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear, Tom. And I'm hearing from my mate, Lazarus Papasavis, who goes to all the World Cups. He just texted me and said he's having the best World Cup. He says it's actually, the stadiums are incredible and it's fun afterwards. And, you know, he's saying that, you know, it'll get a lot of heat this World Cup, and probably rightfully so, in terms of the dark forces that sent a World Cup to Qatar. But now that it's there for the people who are there, it's a thing of happiness and joy. And did it feel like, I guess one of the questions we all had was how restrictive it would be. So in this sort of moment where does everyone just sort of drink freely and party freely, or is there sort of a handbrake of Qatari society over all that?
Well, I am not 21, so of course I have not consumed a single sip of alcohol either tonight or on this trip. But I must say that it has not been really restrictive at all. There were these like foreign people that try to like kick us out of the place that we were standing because we were in the front row, and even like the security guards basically said to them, like, these are all Australians, like they're all just like supporting their team, go find another seat, pretty much. And then after the game and like in the pub and stuff like that, everyone was just like hugging each other, going like completely like mental. There's this actually really good clip of me basically like saying, like, I can't even remember what I said, to be honest, but I was going on with the Adamo from SBS. He came into the crowd after the game. So if that clip comes out, it will be a pretty good representation of all my thoughts directly after the game. And everyone was sort of just hugging each other and chanting in the background. It was absolutely mental. It hasn't been restrictive at all. And that's one of, like, there's so much stuff you can say about Qatar and the egregious human rights abuses that the state has committed, particularly against the migrant workers that that live here, and there's a lot of them. But one of the things that I will say is that a lot of the stuff that I came in thinking about Qatar has turned out to be like completely untrue, particularly a lot of the laws that people seem to say are like set in stone. I don't know if they've like, because this is my experience, obviously, I don't know if they've like changed it specifically for the World Cup or whatever, but I've just not experienced any of these like completely restrictive, conservative and ridiculous laws that are allegedly ingrained within the Qatari legislature. They've seemed to have really like been quite lenient on them during the World Cup, which is really good because it makes it feel like a World Cup atmosphere, and it's such a party atmosphere here because there's just different cultures partying every day, and I get to see and meet people from everywhere in the world. It's quite unbelievable.
Great. Are you there, Harper?
Sorry, I'm back now. I don't think the Wi-Fi in my accommodation is a little too flash, but I've switched over to my hotspot. Hopefully I don't run out of data. I got most of what Tom said in little choppy bits and pieces, but still brought the goosebumps back out. And Tony, I was going to mention before, because you brought it up, your blog. It's goodronwilson.substack.com, and I highly, 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 highly recommend that people check it out. I'm not just saying that because you're here. I'm saying that because it's bloody good writing. Like you said, heaps of stuff about Socceroos, heaps of awesome stuff outside Socceroos as well. no doubt everyone who's tuning into this will read the Socceroos stuff and thoroughly enjoy it.
Well, the next one, Harper, the next one, which I have to sit down to do and summon my stamina because I've only had 45 minutes of sleep myself, but I am going to write about Fed Square, you know, and the messiness of it, the glory of it, you know, the moment where I thought someone had chucked a flare into the screen, the cops just standing around, hanging out with my daughter, hanging out with my mate. It was great. So I'm going to write that one up later today.
It's such an awesome thing. Tom, touched on this. Oh, Tom, you going off.
What was the demographic there like? Because I've been seeing a lot of people who I wouldn't like typically associate as being football fans sort of joining in on the wagon, which is fantastic to see, by the way. Like, we should not gatekeep football at all. Like, everyone is welcome. Everyone should be supporting the sport if they care about it. But I'm sort of just interested to know what it was, what the type of people there was like.
So what we counted was we were counting the girls. So my daughter's 15 and she plays football, and she's actually had a year of AFL, but she's played football since she was 7 and pretty passionate. But we looked around and probably in her age group, there was small groups of, I reckon I only saw a dozen or 20. It was just no girls. It really was just this young guys. It was young guys, and I would say largely football. Certainly, I would say that there was a lot of, you know, if you think of a rugby crowd as being kind of white guys like me, it felt like it was the whole of immigrant Australia was there. And so I got the feeling that it was a very strong football crowd, as in every football person who was in that younger, mainly younger. It was dads like me, then young guys, and a handful of girls. But yeah, it was not sort of families. It's not. It was this, and not too many little kids because it's 2 a.m. I heard little kids were at Tunisia, and little kids were at France in Fed Square because of the times were better. And there'll probably be little kids at Argentina, but it was pretty full on actually. It was, whoa, this is fun, but it is full on. I am in a, you know, like it's guys going off. Yeah.
Yeah. And few, in terms of the AFLers, guys' partners scattered amongst there as well.
Yeah, and in terms of whether the AFLers were coming, I always say I'm with you, Tom, like embrace them, because I was one and am one. So I'm a massive Hawthorn fan and been involved in the board shenanigans there over the last few weeks and love footy. But, you know, one of my big transitions was to this side, to the Socceroos back in 97, 25 years ago. It was on the 29th of November that we played Iran in 1997, and that's the day that crystallised for me. And that was an AFL soccer day. You know, everyone went to the MCG, 94,000 at the MCG, and I was blown away. You know, that I said this on the podcast the other day with Joe. What's that one called? The Inside Football
Inside
Podcast.
Football Podcast.
Had a moment where I was just hugging. We thought we were through, and I was hugging this old guy, this old Greek guy or Italian guy. And he was crying and I was crying and we were in a big hug when we were 2-0 up before Peter Hoare came on and jumped on the net. And and, you know, and we coughed up to, you know, Terry Venables didn't bring on the defenders, and we give up two goals and don't go to France 98. And I went to France 98, and everything went from there, though. That was my indoctrination into the sense that this game is different to AFL. And the emotional highs and lows of football I find to be much higher and much lower. And so that this sort of feeling we've got today, I don't really get that from footy. Even though I really like and love footy, I don't think it gives that sort of adrenaline and also that sort of fear. So we watched that first half, and because you know the patterns and you can see the dangers unfolding once you've watched football a little bit, you go, oh, we're opened up there, we're gone, we've coughed it up in the wrong part of the pitch, it's over, you know. So you live this life with perpetual adrenaline and stress. And, you know, I find that emotional toll different to any other sport that I've ever watched. You know, that I just come out like a wreck at the end of games. And so, you know, so I found that. That was my transition 25 years ago, watching that Iran game. Swore that day that I would see the Socceroos qualify, made them my team, and I'm just so proud today because that 25-year journey, I feel, you know, we got real vindication in 06 because that pain was paid off with an incredible experience in Germany. But again, the team has had, since the Asian Cup, the team has had, you know, a lot of down amongst the ups. I think we've always tried hard, but there's been a feeling that the quality has diminished, and such a feeling of vindication today that sometimes it's not quality, you know. You just got to be a team, and we're a team at this World Cup.
Yeah, it's as evidenced by fans from every corner of the globe, football, soccer, whatever you call it, just there's a fire that burns from it for people that is like no other fire that you could possibly have for any other sport, in my opinion. And the World Cup just adds a massive tank of fuel to that fire, and it unites countries, to state the obvious. And it's really, it's so, so, so special. And the groundswell of enthusiasm has come up amongst the young people who have been going to Fed Square and who have really gotten into this World Cup, which has been a really noticeable thing for me, like no other World Cup that I've been alive for in the past. The enthusiasm from non-football fans is not only is it exciting to be a part of in the moment, but it's exciting for the future. It gets you pumped for what the A-League can be and what the Socceroos can be in the future, what the Matildas can be, what everything can be, what the sport can be in this country. And but as I've said before, I was in a pub in Vietnam for this game. I did my research. I had a look where they were going to be showing the World Cup. Found this place, Fatty Sports Bar, near the centre of Ho Chi Minh. And I was there before the first whistle, before the national anthems. No other people in green and gold in their entire room. Massive screens, lots of people there, but everyone seems like a neutral. And then throughout the game, even up to the 90-minute mark, people got sucked in. Socceroos shirts, Socceroos scars like moths to a bright, bright light. and the massive screen, people who weren't that interested in the game all found themselves glued to it by the 90th minute because it was just that enthralling. And me and five or ten other dudes who I met on the night, we were all in the centre in our Socceroos kits, by far the most boisterous of anyone.
Are you there on holiday, Harper?
I'm there on a study tour.
Okay.
And these guys were here on a study tour as well. Just bumped into them. Happened to be from Melbourne too, which was cool. I was going to say that if we acted like we were acting in the second half of that game and after the final whistle, in any other situation, if it wasn't the World Cup, we would just be looked down upon. We weren't committing any crimes or anything like that, but we were like smacking the table and screaming our throats out and singing every song under the sun. But it didn't matter. People, well, they didn't care that we were being boisterous in a bad way. They cared, they loved it. Because it was the World Cup, because it was this massive party, and because we were right at the centre of this party. And, coolest experience of my life. Nowhere near what Tom would have experienced, but just amazing night.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's it. I always try and explain it to people. I've never been sadder than when we didn't get the World Cup here, because it's just an indescribable party, what Tom's doing. But that idea of seeing everyone at their happiest, everyone united by the sport they love and at their happiest and got something to talk about, and there's smiles on faces, and it's just this adrenaline shot of happiness. And, you know, and I my mate Cam, who I go to them with, he was in Fed Square with me last night, and I sort of interviewed him. The reporter in me just stuck the phone in his face at the end, and he said, "We should be there." So even in that happiness of Fed Square, you know, you just sort of, we know what we're missing. It's amazing.
Is there a possibility that...
Oh, you think I should go? Let's go.
Is there a possibility that it happens for you, Tony?
No, it's so expensive, the flights, and, you know, the other question, Tommy, you said you're staying on, but lots of Australians will battle now because they'll have scheduled for the group, and, you know, you've got to work out with work, can you stay on, and there'll be a rush for tickets. There's no guarantee you get a round of 16 Argentina. I remember there's a chapter of Australia United that's about the rush for tickets for the Italy game. It was like this, like the Amazing Race, you know, with people punching and trying to get to the front of queues, and it was full on. So I don't know whether that's in front of the Qatar bound Socceroos fans, but yeah, it's going to be full on getting tickets. Yeah.
Oh, it 100% is for all the people that don't have them, especially because we're playing bloody Argentina, who, like, aside from being, you know, Argentina, have, like, one of the biggest fan bases here in Qatar. There are, like, absolutely tons of them here. Probably, I would say, like, the third or fourth biggest, probably behind, like, Mexico, Saudi Arabia, and Tunisia, maybe. And then it's, like, Argentina. There's a lot of them here. So it's going to be pretty difficult for those people to get tickets. Fortunately, though, I'm very lucky that I've got the TST4, so I will be guaranteed tickets to that game. They haven't come through yet, but they will be there very soon, I hope. And I know a couple of people already that have rescheduled their flights. They were scheduled to leave in the next couple of days, but they will not be missing the round of 16 game. It'll just be mental, absolutely mental.
Wow, yeah, such an exciting thing to be a part of.
Are you going to be in Vietnam, Harper?
I am going to be in Vietnam till the 21st, so that will cover the final. But, well, not if, when we make the final, me and my newfound mates from Fatty Sports Bar, we've locked ourselves in to get the first camel over to Doha. We're gonna make the trek, whoever we play in the final. We'll be there. Tom, what was I going to ask you? Oh, yeah, George Kostakos, of course. Some listeners, viewers might be interested because he's a great friend of the show, a panellist. Do you know what his situation is?
Great friend of mine as well.
Has he got tickets to the Argentina game?
I have a feeling. I've literally just spent like the last few hours with him before I got onto this pod at the Hive. I have a feeling that he only had tickets for the round, for the group stage, but I have a feeling he may be rescheduling his flight. He's with the Fanatics, that the fan group, sort of like the Green and Gold Army. So I'm not sure what the situation there is. I feel like he may have better access to round of 16 tickets through that. So prayers up for George. He's an absolute legend. I'm sure I'll be seeing him at the game. It'll be. Yeah, I saw him after full time today, and it was pretty cool to go and see him and give him a big hug. The absolute legend, and then multiple hugs at the Hive after the game. It was, yeah, just super cool. So hopefully, prayers up for George. I'm sure he'll get a ticket, but hopefully he'll be here to witness that with us all.
Well, you and your mate Callum and George and his mate Panos, we've got a few glimpses of all of you on the screen, which was very, very cool to see you in the front row, Tom. incredible experience. Again, I keep saying it, but how good must it be? We're up to 55 minutes in the show now. I don't know how much of the other games you guys watch, but Tom, I know that you were at the Saudi-Mexico game. Or Tony, do you want to say anything else on the Socceroos first?
No, it looks like we're injury-free, which is good. We must be tired. The starters must be exhausted. So let's hope they sleep well. They keep their shape. They're disciplined. They're brave. I think we'll win 2-0 against Argentina. I don't actually, but I just determinedly, because I said this on the Inside Football Pod as well, but I think there's karma at play here. So the football world gods or whatever know that Cam and I didn't go, and we laughed. He said, "This will be the one I'll get to the last eight or something, and that'll be our punishment." And I think that is our that's the penance that Cam and I have to pay, that the Socceroos get to the last eight.
Well, speaking of predictions, our mate Pat Brochetto, who unfortunately couldn't make it onto the show today because he's busy writing for Sporting News, which I do encourage you to check out as well. He predicted that he predicted that Tunisia beat France, which was very good from him. But erroneously, he also predicted that Australia would only get 1 point and Denmark would get to the semis. And how beautiful a thing is it to know that Pat was so far off the mark. Pat, no doubt you're absolutely delighted as well. Tom, are you giving us a shot against Argentina?
Look, and spoiler alert, but once I get some sleep, I'll be writing some sort of tactical analysis on Argentina. I don't know how, I've watched two of Argentina's games. I didn't watch them today against Poland, but I watched them against Mexico, and I watched them when Saudi Arabia beat them. And I'm actually confident, that there are ways you can sort of get at them. We literally saw, everyone was watching the Saudi Arabia game. We literally saw Saudi Arabia do a really good job at them by being really physical, being really aggressive, and not letting Messi have much time on the ball. And I think a lot of that is what we need to do. There's obviously more to it than that. But I think, look, you can't go into a football match like this, one of the biggest that we've ever had as a country, and expect not to have a chance. You've got to give yourselves a chance. That's the reason that we're football fans. It's going to take the biggest effort we've ever had ever in a football match, but why not?
And a lot of luck. But luck happens sometimes. You know, we had a bit of luck in the first half hour last night. And, and you're right, Saudi Arabia played them well. And we played in Italy around the 16 in 06. And I guess when we went in, we thought we couldn't win that because Italy were Italy and we were the Socceroos and, you know, we don't match it. But we matched it with them for, you know, 90 minutes and then got, you know, done in the last few minutes with Lucas Neal falling over in the box, but or bringing what's his other name over in the box, but basically
Grosso.
You know, yeah, Grosso, that's right. And so there's things that happen, and it might work for us. Who knows? You know, it's great to be alive.
And speaking of luck, hold on. Speaking of luck, imagine being a Tunisian fan right now. They literally went undefeated against France and Denmark. Didn't get through the group. Beat France in the last game, thinking that there was no chance Australia could possibly beat Denmark, and still didn't get through. That's hilarious. I'm sorry.
So good. Sorry to any Tunisians tuning in. With a big,
that is tough, fan isn't it?
We've got Tunis.
What I tell you, we were unlucky in 2010, though. I was looking at those when I was doing the goal compilation. How unlucky is it to win two games and lose your first one 4-0 and that costs you? We got 6 points and didn't make the round of 16.
Well, we got a win for draw, didn't we, in 2010?
Was it 1-1 with Ghana, was it, or was it 1-0?
Yeah. That was the one game all, where Harry Jewell got sent off for the red
card. Okay. It wasn't 6 points, it was 4 points. Okay.
But still, unlucky, because so often teams get through on 4 points, and that shellacking we copped at the hands of Germany just killed all our hopes. But let's not get down and negative. Let's move on. We've already just about covered Tunisia, France, I reckon. I'll be completely open and honest. I have not seen a minute of highlights of anything. Poland 0, Argentina 2, or Saudi Arabia 1, Mexico 2. But Tom, you were at the Mexico game, and I heard there was all kinds of drama with that, with a late goal from Saudi Arabia and Mexico crashing out because of it, and they thought the fair play rule was might have to decide who was going to finish second. It was crazy.
Oh, my God. It was... I know I said earlier that the Tunisia v Australia game was the best atmosphere I've ever experienced at a football game, but like this was 87,000 people in Lusail Stadium. It was probably the two biggest fan bases in Qatar going directly against each other, Saudi Arabia and Mexico. And it was the most ridiculous game, both on and off the field, that I think I've ever experienced in my life. Saudi Arabia started the game really well. They had a lot of players injured. The Saudi Arabia fans had a massive banner that they held up for the entire game, like in the front row of their active, saying like get well Yasser and Salman, referring to Salman Al-Faraj, their captain, and Yasser Al-Shirani, their starting left back. And then they had one of their really good players go down early in the game as well. I think it was Al-Balehi. It was one of the defenders went down earlier in the game with an injury, subbed off after 36 minutes. And that obviously affected them as well. So they had a lot of players out injured. And then Mexico just got completely on top of the game. Their fans came into it. Chavez scored the most insane free kick. And I got it on tape as well. It was absolutely mental, left foot straight into the top bins. It was mad. And then so Mexico went 2-0 up, and then from there on Argentina were up 2-0 against Poland, which meant that Mexico and Poland were tied in second place on points, on goals, on goals against, on goal difference, on head-to-head, which meant that the fair play rule was the only thing separating the two teams. Poland on 5 yellow cards, Mexico on 7. So the final half hour was just the team, like Mexico fans just going absolutely bonkers. Like it's impossible to describe like how loud they were in this stadium. It was like the whole half was like Mexico fans just going mental and trying to will Mexico over the line. They like pulled all the stops out. The players were getting mad as at the referee, the coach as well. And then in the 95th minute, against the run of play, Salem Al-Dosari, who obviously was the hero against Argentina in the first game, comes and scores a goal. And then Mexico's hopes of making the knockouts are just completely dashed. And it was a really anticlimactic way to finish the game, because you just thought that it was written in the stars that Mexico would go and get that 3-0 victory. But it just unfortunately didn't happen. I felt so, so, so bad, because I was sitting there in my Socceroos kit knowing that like we'd already won the game and had tons of people coming up to me telling me that we're the greatest country ever and that we're going to beat Argentina and stuff. But yeah, felt so bad for Mexico in that moment. It wasn't very good to see. I just wanted them to win so bad in the end there.
Yeah, I watched the last 15 minutes. I echo everything you say about the frenetic nature of that and how positive Mexico were. And they've had a bad World Cup. You know, they've had boring games and just haven't seemed to have had any life to them. But, yeah, as you say, something happened around... I didn't see the first half. I just watched the last 15 minutes. And they were just flying. There was a sense of impending goal. And somehow they weren't going in. And then they got one, a bang on the counter, and it was over for them, and they're gone. And they're a massive country. There's a sign. Like now, one of the nice feelings of being in the round of 16 is to go, wow, look who's going home, you know?
Yeah.
Mexico's going home. And Denmark. You know, these are
Denmark.
A big, successful countries, and we're there, and yeah.
Yeah, well, first time Mexico has failed to progress from the group stage since 1978. They've missed two World Cups between then and now, but still pretty crazy. And I think for seven World Cups in a row, 94 to 2018, they made the round of 16 and lost in the round of 16. But couldn't quite replicate that top.
Also, just, it has to be said, like, as much as I give the AFC countries a lot of credit, and I was going to that game tonight supporting Saudi Arabia, obviously, until the second half when that Mexico comeback would have just been insane. But how's the bottle job from Saudi Arabia? They win against Argentina.
Yeah.
And then all they need really is, like, a point against either Poland or Mexico, and they manage to lose twice in a row. Like, that is just – that must just be gutting, especially knowing how many hundreds of thousands of Saudi Arabia fans were here in Qatar. Like, I cannot even tell you how many fans came up to me today, Saudi Arabian fans, like, asking for a ticket to the game.
Yeah.
Like, it is – like, there are so many people who didn't get tickets to this game. There are – thousands and thousands of Saudi Arabians here. Like I've said so many times, you would genuinely be so shocked to hear that they aren't the host country. Like, it, to the point where if you walk outside, there are just people with Saudi Arabian flags draped around their neck. There's like, they wear like the galabeah, like the white like dress thing with the red and white headscarf, and they wear like a green scarf for like the Saudi Arabian team, and they're just everywhere, like absolutely everywhere. So It would have been just so gutting to see their team, like all that hope that they would have got after the Argentina game. Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, giving the players all Rolls Royces, thinking that like only a point, we're into the round of 16. But then they just lose it against Mexico and Poland. Just so, so gutting for them, honestly.
And
how did you get it?
And Asia's not getting that. You know, it just did look good for Asia when you got Saudi Arabia and Japan having such convincing first match wins, and then and Australia is, we might be the champs of Asia in this World Cup, the way it's looking. I mean, Japan have got to get through. It's going to be hard for them. Who else is still alive?
South Korea and Japan. But Japan need a draw against Spain. But the fortunate thing against, or a draw or a win, really. The fortunate thing for Japan, though, is it's basically a dead rubber for Spain, I think, because they should get through with a draw irrespective, because even if Spain draw with Japan, then I think if Germany beat Costa Rica, then Germany might finish third or something. I don't know. There's some weird stuff that's going to happen now. I need to go look at it with goal difference.
Well, I'll say Spain's on top with 4 points and plus 7 goal difference after that smashing they gave to Costa Rica. And then Japan and Costa Rica both on 3 points. Costa Rica, -6 goal difference. Japan, 0 goal difference. Germany, bottom with just 1 point. But and of course, they all play tonight. And both games are on at 6 a.m. Melbourne, Sydney time, Eastern Daylight time. Japan versus Spain and Costa Rica versus Germany. Tony, what do you think is going to happen in that?
Well, Germany will win, but the question is, like, will they be chasing goal difference? Imagine if they are. Like, imagine if they need to score 6 or something. It's going to be, it could be that sort of a game where guys like Musiala, imagine just how, that'll be unbelievable to watch if it's Germany on song, pumping in goals, chasing a massive, a cricket score to try to qualify, and guys like Musiala and everyone just unleashed, you know, and piling forward. It could be incredible to watch. And at the same time, then the other one, who did we say it was? It was Spain and
Rica versus Germany and Japan versus Spain.
And Japan versus Spain. I'll be barking hard for Japan, but it's hard for me to know because just don't know what the lineups are like. If Spain rests a whole lot of people, as you said, Tom, maybe if they're going in at full strength, I'd expect Spain to win 2-0. They're great.
Just quickly, Spain are like unbelievable. I don't know, like, if either of you caught the Spain v Germany game the other night, but I was fortunate enough to be at that, and the quality in that game was like, genuinely ridiculous. Like,
yeah,
the Spain midfield, that was like to see that actually playing out, like, it was like a work of art watching Spain play. And I know they didn't get the win in the end. Germany were pretty good on the day, to be honest, as well. But Spain just, I think they'll go very far in this competition. They're a really, really, really good team, and really well coached as well with Luis Enrique. But what I will say, just quickly as well, I managed to get tickets to the Saudi Arabia v Mexico game through sheer luck rather than anything else. It was because they have this sort of period before the tickets are like listed as games where they're just basically numbers, right? So me and my mate, when we originally bought the tickets in like the first come, first serve sale, they were just like match 36 or whatever, or match 40 tonight. So we just bought like all the tickets that were at loose sale and at our bait for like in between the middle games of the tournament, because we know that they put the big games there. And this just happened to be like a massive game they scheduled at loose sale. So we managed to get that one, which was absolutely huge. But also, I won't be at the Spain or the Germany game tomorrow, but I can confirm I will be supporting Belgium in my Belgium kit as they look to knock Croatia out of the World Cup. I'm a big fan of Kevin De Bruyne and, of course, the Red Devils, Belgium. So come on, they're going to get the job done, and then Morocco is going to beat Canada. Croatia's going to be out. Belgium's going to finish second. You watch.
Have you, Tom, are you tempted to do any traitorish dresses? Like my mate Cam often used to put on the full Netherlands kit and other such atrocities in order to be a very excited neutral.
I'll tell you what, for this Belgium versus Croatia kit game, I am very, very tempted to go purchase the Belgium shorts and the Belgium socks. But I have got the Belgium shirt with Kevin De Bruyne on it, and I think that will suffice. I will be a firm supporter of the Red Devils tomorrow. Just you watch.
So both those games are happening at 2 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Croatia, Belgium, Morocco, Canada. Of course, we've got Croatia and Morocco tied on 4 points. Croatia has got the upper hand in terms of goal difference. They're on 3. Morocco's on 2. And we've got Belgium in third on 3 points, -1 goal difference. Canada out of the tournament bottom with 0 points, -4 goal difference. Tony, are you going to watch these games, and how do you see it playing out?
I'm trying to watch. I won't get up for 2 a.m.ers that aren't Socceroos anymore. I'm a 6 a.m. man, and I'll watch the mini matches at the 2 a.m.ers. So until the knockouts, that is. Once the knockouts are on, I might be up again in the middle. But basically, I'm thinking, well, Canada are a shot, aren't they? So you've got Belgium. Who have they got?
Croatia.
Croatia. Croatia are excellent against Canada. I don't know. There's a lot of us Croatians in Australia. I don't really mind who goes through out of Croatia and Belgium. I'm a true neutral on that one, and I don't have enough knowledge of world football to be able to give a meaningful opinion. I would just say that Belgium were a little bit ordinary in their first game, which I did watch, and Croatia were very excellent in their smashing of Canada in the second half. I didn't think they were too old, too slow, gone. I thought they were a proper force, and so it wouldn't surprise me if it's Croatia. That's my kind of tip, I guess, from the two games I've watched.
Tom, is there anything else you'd like to add just before we wrap up? It's been a bit of a marathon episode, but you're free to say what you wish.
I guess it's just been a very seminal day in my life, sort of seeing the Socceroos win against Denmark. It was just absolutely phenomenal. The Saudi-Mexico game was, like, absolutely unbelievable as well, the atmosphere in that crowd. It's just absolutely phenomenal being here in Qatar, experiencing all this. I'm very, very grateful to be able to do it, that's for sure. But, yeah, I really, really hope that everyone who I saw at the Hive can get tickets for the round of 16 game against Argentina, just because it's going to be the most mental thing ever. It's like going to be the Denmark game, like multiplied by 1,000, and at 6 a.m. in Australia. So everyone's going to be on their tellies at Fed Square, at George Street, at whatever live sites will be running across the country, like everywhere. It'll be the most ridiculous game. And then the other thing that I just have to say is, come on, Belgium, for tomorrow. Like, get the job done. Kevin De Bruyne, let's go.
Tony, I should really encourage people to check out your fantastic blog, goodonewilson.substack.com. But other than the plug for that, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we head off?
I'd echo what Tom said. And what I was a bit emotional hearing him talk about his life in football and it culminating in this day. And I felt, I felt Johnny come lately in 06. I felt like I discovered football in 97 and followed the Socceroos round. But in 06, I watched the tears of an older generation who had been brought up watching Brunswick Juventus play and watching the NSL be born and then watching the NSL die and then the A-League be born. And it had been this long, traumatic road that took us to 06. And I feel as though the A-League road that we're on now has its bumps as well. In 06, we're in year two of it and we had no bumps and no real idea of what that forward view was. But we actually know that there have been quite a few bumps and that the A-League has sometimes had moments where it's felt like it's grabbing momentum and sometimes had moments where it's going backwards. But I think probably in the last 3 or 4 years, there's been a real feeling in the general sporting population, this is a sport that's not thriving. And so on the local level. And so for us to see an A-League bloke, Matthew Leckie, I know that he's a lot of his best football's been played overseas, but he's an A-League player right now doing that on the world stage to some of the world's great defenders. What we saw in the goal against France was, again, A-League Matt Leckie putting the ball in front of A-League Craig, mental blank, Craig, pops it into the roof of the net. These are our guys that they're firing and they're firing on the world stage, and it's a real moment of celebration. And I think people of your generation, your age group, can feel like, yes, you know, that we've done hard yards and now we're having our day in the sun. And I hope everyone's enjoying it.
And I hope everyone enjoyed this episode of the podcast very, very much. This celebratory party episode after the biggest Socceroos win in a long, 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 long time. And as we prepare for this massive Socceroos game, Australia versus Argentina on Sunday morning at 6 a.m, try to get to a live site if you can, because the atmosphere is there, as Tony stated. And as everyone knows, they're just absolutely tremendous. And should also encourage people to check out the Inside Football podcast, which Tony, you appear on. That's an absolutely fantastic show. Joe Simon does an awesome job with that. And if you did enjoy the episode, this episode, please do check out our Buy Me A Coffee page, which is buymeacoffee.com/TGG football. Tom, thank you very much for joining us. It's nearly 5:30 a.m. I believe, Qatar time. So
that is correct.
Getting through it.
No, thank you, Harper. It is always a pleasure. I look forward to getting a few hours of sleep and then getting to writing this tactical analysis of Argentina before I go support Belgium tomorrow. So that should be absolutely phenomenal. Thank you.
Enjoy the rest, mate. Sweet dreams. And Tony, thank you very much for joining us again. Hope to see you maybe sometime soon before the end of the World Cup, before we make the final. But thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, well, I look forward to it.
It's a pleasure.
See you, mate. See you, Harper. Bye, Tom.
Catch you, mate.
Cheers.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.